Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
Welcome to Football is Family, a podcast dedicated to the fan and fan experience. My name is Jeremy McFarland, and I want to look at the positives behind what makes football so enjoyable to watch and follow. I want to know why you are a fan of your team, of a player, or an era of football. Whether the pros, college, or high school, I want to hear and share your stories and your love for the game. If you want to be part of this podcast, please message me on Twitter at Jeremy_McFarland or on Facebook at the Football is Family Facebook page.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
We'd like to welcome you back to the Football is Family podcast. And kind of feeling a little nostalgic right now. This past weekend, I was over at the college that I graduated from, Fried Hardeman University, and enjoying what they call making music. It's a time where a lot of the kids get together, they dress up and they perform songs and compete with other social clubs. It's not fraternities or sororities at Fried Hardman, it's social clubs. And it was pretty neat. I was taking my kids, my daughters would be the first time that they got to see it. And I was thinking, I was part of two of those events, won both of them. Of course, I don't take credit for it. I take partial credit. I don't take full credit for it. But I won the ones that I were in. We won overall best show, which is what we're trying to get. I was thinking the first one that I was in was in 1998. I was a freshman in college at that time. And I was learning, you know, a lot of the ropes. I learned that I needed to study harder. I learned that I needed to do a lot of things better. And the next year I did do that, thank goodness. But in 1998, a couple things happened in that year that applied to the football aspect and the family aspect. We'll get to the football in just a second. But in the family aspect, one of my favorite albums of all time was released on April 28th, which is about the same time as the NFL draft, by the way. April 28th, 1999, the Dave Matthews Band released the album Before These Crowded Streets. Now, if somebody says, why are you a Dave Matthews fan? I would show them this album first and foremost. They have several great songs on it. But my favorite Dave Matthews song is the eighth song on the album, Crush. Now, if you're listening to 90s on 9 on Sirius Radio, they're going to play the radio edit. Don't do that. The actual song is 8 minutes and 9 seconds long. You find that version and listen to it and tell me how great that song is. And you can leave in the comments that I'm crazy, but at the same time, I think I'm right on that. It's my favorite one overall. And there's several great songs on this album. But in 1998, the Dave Matthews Band released Before These Crowded Streets. Now, this album itself was one of the songs that it was one of the albums that really did a number for making Dave Matthews more popular in the mainstream. Now, they kind of veered off on that, but they had mainstream success for songs like Crush. But in 1998 as well, the NFL had a great season, not only with stats, but also drafting. Overall, the 1998 draft was pretty solid. So today we're going to talk for just a few minutes about the 1998 NFL draft and the NFL season. Now, the 1998 NFL season ended with one of my favorite games of all time, but it started, and this is really when I started paying attention to the draft. I wasn't really a draft person at this point. But growing up in Tennessee, I kept hearing Peyton Manning, Peyton Manning, Peyton Manning, Peyton Manning. In fact, a lot of people who I knew were Titans fans, you know, because Titans just came over to Nashville at this time, or actually Memphis, and they're heading to Nashville soon. They said, wherever Peyton goes, I will be a fan of that team. I was like, yeah, you need to be a local fan. They said, wherever Peyton goes, I will be a fan of that team. And I remember that particular year, the debate was Ryan Leaf or Peyton Manning. Now, I watched Peyton Manning play. Peyton came to Nashville several times, twice. And destroyed the Commodores. It wasn't even fair how good he was and how bad the Commodores were and are, really. But Peyton really legitimized the Vols. And if it wasn't for the Florida Gators, Peyton would have probably won a national championship or two. You know, the next year, T. Martin led them to a national championship over the Florida State Seminoles. Peyton really... And he should have probably won the Heisman Trophy that year as well. But it was a debate between Peyton Manning and Ryan Leaf. Now, for those who didn't grow up during this time, and all they're doing is looking back and seeing, the TV shows about, or the YouTube videos or whatever, about how bad Ryan Leaf was and how big of a jerk he was and a lot of the other stuff that was going on, you may think that I'm talking crazy. How could you pick Ryan Leaf over Peyton Manning? Well, at the time, both of them were coming off great careers in their particular colleges. You know, Peyton Manning with Tennessee, Ryan Leaf with Washington State. Both of them had the upside. Ryan Leafs tend to have a bigger upside than Peyton. They thought that Peyton reached his limit or didn't have that big of an upside compared to how great Ryan Leaf was going to be. So it all came down to what GM, particularly the Indianapolis Colts, what their GM was going to pick at that time. And as we know from history, they made the right choice. The first overall pick that year was Peyton Manning, who ended up, according to Pro Football Reference, with 71,940 yards and 539 touchdowns, two Super Bowls, several MVPs. Ryan Leaf, on the other hand, ended up with a lot less yards, a lot less touchdowns, probably more times in jail than he would want to recognize. But when you look at the NFL draft, especially the first round, you have four people who were picked that round, were picked in that round that ended up being a Hall of Fame, being in the Hall of Fame. Alan Faneca, Randy Moss, Peyton Manning, and Charles Woodson. Now, Charles Woodson, many of you know, he was the guy that sacked Tom Brady during the Tuck Rule. That was him. But Charles Woodson was a great player for the Raiders and then eventually for the Green Bay Packers, won a Super Bowl with them in particular after he dislocated his shoulder. He was there on the sidelines being an inspiration and winning a Super Bowl. Peyton, of course, would win a Super Bowl with the Indianapolis Colts and then would win one with the Denver Broncos. And Randy Moss should have made it to the Super Bowl when Gary Anderson missed that field goal. We give Gary Anderson a hard time, but Randy Moss should have won a Super Bowl. And Alan Faneca was on some bad teams in particular. But I want to point out something about this particular draft. You know, you look at people like Keith Brooking and Takeo Spikes, and one of my personal favorites was Kevin Dyson. You know, people were talking about, well, why didn't you pick Randy Moss? Randy Moss had some problems with his background that the Titans were a little bit concerned about. Would it have been better to have Randy Moss? Maybe. But Kevin Dyson had some big moments for the Titans as well. And in fact, we did get Randy Moss for just about two or three games later on in his career. And there were several strong players picked up in this particular draft. Corey Chavis was one of my favorite players. He played for Vanderbilt. I remember thinking, man, I could be an Arizona Cardinals fan because of that. But when you look at this draft, overall, it was pretty solid. Four Hall of Famers in a draft is pretty good. But when you think about the 1998 season, the 79th season in the NFL, this season would end John Elway's career in Super Bowl 33. The Denver Broncos defeated the Atlanta Falcons 34-19. And that's something with that particular one I remember because I watched the game. I was a big Broncos fan at the time. And I remember seeing John Elway winning the MVP. And, you know, you kind of thought that when he won the MVP and won the Super Bowl, he would be done. I mean, why would you stay around another year, especially with your health kind of being a little bit – you're in your late 30s, you're playing the NFL, your health is a little iffy. Why would you stay around after you won the MVP and you won a Super Bowl? The Broncos, according to this particular website I'm looking at here, it says the Broncos had won their first 13 games, the best start since the undefeated 1972 Dolphins, and were tipped by some to have a realistic chance at winning all 19 games. Now, I remember hearing stories about this, that Mike Shanahan would allow the Broncos on their practices, if they won the game, to wear, not to wear a helmet, but to wear a hat. And Terrell Davis kept telling people, said, I don't want to wear a helmet during practice. We're going to win this game so we can wear our hat. And, of course, when they lost, they had to go back to wearing a helmet. But I'm looking at the stats, and you want to know what's funny about the end of the stats? Listen to the AFC East. The AFC East. You want to know who won the AFC East at this time? The New York Jets. They were 12-4 at the time. 12-4, and they made the playoffs. The New England Patriots were 9-7. But at this time, the Indianapolis Colts were in the AFC East too. They were 3-13. Basically, Peyton Manning was a tackling dummy that year. They basically threw Peyton Manning out to the wolves, and he learned to get the ball out pretty quickly because their offensive line couldn't protect him and their defense couldn't really hold a lead. Here's the thing that I guess you could apply this to your life as well in some ways. Don't judge how good you are at something by the first time you do it. The first year that Peyton Manning played NFL quarterback, started the game for the Indianapolis Colts, he looked like a fish out of water. He was not prepared, but he was a rookie. Now, obviously, he got better. But if you judge your career or what you're good at by the first time you try it or the first two or three times you try it, you're never going to get to do great things in that particular field. Maybe you're not going to be good at it. Maybe you find out later on that you need to be trying something else. But if you just look at one or two times and say, I can't do it, you're never going to be able to do great things. You're just going to give up too quickly. And I tell men this particular when they said, well, Jeremy, you're public speaking. I've been doing public speaking on and off for about 22 years, actually for 30 years, really, but 22 years full time. And people ask me, are you nervous when you preach still? I said, oh, absolutely I am. But if I were to judge the first two or three times that I spoke in public and say, this is how good I'm going to be, man, I would quit quickly. I would give it up quickly. If Peyton Manning gave it up quickly, imagine how different the NFL would have been. Peyton Manning really did make the NFL a better place to play. He really did raise the bar on a lot of things. And despite him being a Tennessee Volunteer, Peyton Manning really did help the NFL become what it is today. The NFL owes him a lot. Now, I remember in this particular season, I remember watching the playoffs. And I remember watching and seeing the Broncos just dominate their opponents. And in reality, the 34-19 victory over the Atlanta Falcons in the Super Bowl, you may think, well, that's pretty close. The game wasn't that close. The game was dominated by the Broncos. The Broncos were just that much of a better team. But in particular, when you go back and look at how the Minnesota Vikings played, the Minnesota Vikings in this particular year, the Gary Anderson miss, I should say, and I might have mentioned that a second ago, the Minnesota Vikings would have given the Broncos an amazingly more difficult opponent than the Atlanta Falcons did. Now, I want you to think about the Minnesota Vikings and who was playing for them at the time. Randy Moss was on it. Randy Moss was on their team, but also, what you think about their quarterbacks? And I want you to think about their team that they were playing. And I want you to imagine, just imagine having, listen to this stat line. Randall Cunningham, you may think, well, he's the Eagles quarterback. Randall Cunningham had a resurgent year with Chris Carter and Randy Moss. 3,700 yards, 34 touchdowns. Robert Smith, now, if you've not seen Robert Smith play, Robert Smith was so fluid with his running ability that it made it look like everybody else was just standing still. He was just that good. Randy Moss had 1,300 yards receiving and 17 touchdowns as a rookie. Gary Anderson, even though he missed that extra that field goal in the playoff game, he had 164 points scored. And one of my favorite players of all time, John Randall. Man, that guy was just a freak in nature, how good he was. 10 sacks, 3 forced fumbles. Now, imagine putting that particular team up against the Denver Broncos with John Elway and Terrell Davis and Shannon Sharp. And even more than that, imagine having John Elway playing against, trying to go up against John Randall with Ed McCaffrey going over the middle and Rod Smith going down the middle or going right up the middle and Ed McCaffrey trying to get over the middle, catching between the hash marks. This would have been a great Super Bowl. Now, I am partial to the fact that the Broncos won this Super Bowl, and I'm happy that they did, but can you imagine what that would have been like? Now, the 98 season to me was one of the best seasons I can remember. It's one of my favorite seasons. It was one of the seasons that I can look at and say, hey, this is what, if I could put up a season for people to look at, this is the NFL that I remember. And I do want to point out here, according to Wikipedia, Terrell Davis scored 23 touchdowns. And in that particular year, he rushed for 2,008 yards. He had a short career, but Terrell Davis was the man. Worth every penny to pay to watch and see him. Worth the trip to the Hall of Fame. He was a Georgia player who made his mark getting a tackle in Japan and then given a chance to play football. Terrell Davis, if you have not seen Terrell Davis play, watch some videos of him play, how smooth and how fast he was before he got hurt. Deion Sanders was still in his prime. And again, you go down here to the awards. Terrell Davis won the most valuable player. Dan Reeves, coach of the year. Dan Reeves is a very underrated player. Very underrated player, or coach, I should say. Probably should be in the Hall of Fame. He took the Falcons to the Super Bowl. You know, he took the Broncos to the Super Bowl. Didn't win any of them. If he won one, he would have been in the Hall of Fame by now. Dan Reeves is underrated. Reggie White was the offensive player of the year, or defensive player of the year. Terrell Davis was the offensive player of the year. Doug Flutie. Now, I remember watching Doug Flutie play. Very underrated player. He was the NFL comeback player of the year. And again, John Elway was the Super Bowl most valuable player of the year. In 1998, Dave Matthews Band released probably their best album of all time, in my opinion. Peyton Manning was the first overall pick, going through a lot of growing pains that year, only to come out as probably one of the best, if not the best, quarterback of all time. John Elway wins his second Super Bowl, wins the MVP, and retires. And we get a changing of the guard for the next 20 years, because in the next couple of years, Tom Brady comes along and says that he will take over the mantle as one of the best of all time, if not the best of all time. 98 is a transition year that I think we can look at and say, hey, this is one season that we'll never forget. Thank you for listening to the Football's Family Podcast.
This podcast is sponsored by Play Classic Sports Simulation Board Games, spelled with two A's, P-L-A-A-Y. Realistic board game recreations of professional football, hockey, baseball, NASCAR, golf, and more. They cover 9 sports in all, with a 10th, basketball, coming in 2022. You can relive great sessions of the past, create what-if matchups from different eras, and much more. It's fun. So if you're into sports history, you should check them out. That's Play with two A's, P-L-A-A-Y, classic.com. And don't forget to use the code SHN at checkout and get 10% off your first order.
Hey, are you ready for some football? Some fantasy football? How about some daily fantasy football? Silly questions, right? Of course you are. You're ready to talk some smack and win some cash every Sunday, and Thursday, and Monday, and whenever there's football games. The Sports History Network invites you to play your daily fantasy football this season at ThriveFantasy.com. Thrive Fantasy offers hundreds of thousands, millions in cash every day on NBA, MLB, PGA, golf, cricket, esports, and of course, NFL football. And just to get the 2021 NFL season started right, Thrive Fantasy is holding its $100,000 guaranteed contest with a $20,000 first prize. Sign up with Thrive Fantasy today to get a 100% match bonus on your first deposit for up to $100 in free daily fantasy football play. Visit sportshistorynetwork.com/thrive. That's T-H-R-I-V-E. Or enter promo code SHN when depositing at the cashier. Join Thrive Fantasy today, earn cash prizes, and support great shows like this at the Sports History Network. Now that's a win-win-win situation for you to kick off your own NFL season.
At the Sports History Network, we're all about sports yesteryear, and so we're so pleased to introduce you to Row One, an online memorabilia gallery and shop that brings your sports history to life anywhere. The Row One Gallery includes over 5,200 gorgeously reproduced prints of team posters, game program covers, game tickets, advertisements, and more in baseball, pro and college football, pro and college basketball, and more. And any gallery item may be printed in a variety of sizes on wood, metal, canvas, acrylic, or poster paper. And in Row One Shop, check out the thousands more of you unique items with a retro and historical designs dating back to 1876, including t-shirts, long sleeve shirts, phone cases, mugs, blankets, pillows, towels, and even shower curtains. Go to sportshistorynetwork.com, ROW number one, for access to the full Row One catalog and for gallery prints and gift items. Plus get a 15% discount off all prints on the Row One Pictorum Gallery with coupon code SHN15. Follow the link on the show notes.
Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
The Pigskin Tales podcast is all about the lesser known pro football players. Yes, there are stories about the ones we know, like Brad Tarkenton and Harold Red Grange. But have you ever heard of Ernie Nevers? How about Dave Osborne or even Grady Alderman? These men created their own path to the NFL. How did they do it? Listen to the Pigskin Tales podcast, now streaming on your favorite music platform. Go to pigskintales.com.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.